You are listening to The Issues of Life with marriage family therapist John Jolliffe. 60 minutes of radio therapy designed to help you grow up, not just old.
Hi, welcome to The Issues.
My husband had an affair 7 months ago.
So how do I get over this obsession? Because it's really bugging me.
It's not about loving, it's about rescuing. Adultery?
No. What is it?
No. You can't trust her because you don't trust yourself. You have generalized this difficult relationship you've had with your mother to include all of us. Listen, we're not all alike, and you know that. And we don't have her background. Spend a little time in her background, her family of origin, and you'll know a whole lot more of why Pat was the way she was.
Now here's John.
Hello, everyone. This is John Jolliffe, and welcome to the next issue of Life. I want to talk about some myths. That's right, myths. Myths that exist that are so common you may not even think of them as myths. Myths about relationships. Myths about marriage. One of the myths is that couples who spend a lot of time together usually have good relationships. It's that old argument about the amount of time versus the quality of time. We're really talking about the kind of time that you spend together. Too many aging relationships, relationships that age, not always with class, too many aging relationships are overworked, chronically pressured, burned out couples, and painfully lonely while living together. Making time for one another in the relationship is an absolute key to a successful relationship. You need to do that by beginning to legitimize your time together. In legitimizing your time together, you have to break two habits. I'm going to talk about these two habits, and I want to go and talk to you about another myth, and that's the myth of similarity promotes compatibility. Good relationships don't necessarily spend a lot of time together. It's what they do together, not how long they are together, that makes the difference. Too many people are overworked. They're just absolutely burned out. They're lonely while living together. And what I was suggesting to you is that you must legitimize your time together. And by legitimizing your time together, because all relationships take an investment, whether it's marriage or love or life or work or whatever it is, you must legitimize your time. In order to legitimize your time, you must break two habits. Number one, you must look around and seeing how much it must be done and deciding to do chores instead of spending time with your partner. You see, that's a terrible habit. If you look around your life, no matter where you are, where you're seated right now, right where you're seated right now, you look around you. Can you see things to be done? If you see things to be done and then decide to do the chores instead of spending time together, you do not legitimize your life. You do not legitimize your relationship. You do not invest in that relationship. And guess what? You don't invest in your relationship. It becomes a poor investment. The second habit you have to break in order to legitimize your time together is, at all cost, turn off the television set. Spend some time sitting and talking on the back porch, if you will, or the front porch, or take a slow, leisurely walk together instead. When I was off seeing my daughter this last 3 or 4 days, my wife and I were there. I met my wife there, and we spent time out in the country. So legitimize your relationships by not looking around and seeing how much needs to be done, and at all costs, turn off the television set. Okay, do that, will you? A little later in the program, I'm going to talk about the similarity that promotes compatibility. But let's get to the call, shall we? Let's talk to Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Hi.
Welcome to The Issues.
Thanks. I was calling because I'm having a little bit of problem with my mother.
A little bit?
Well, a big one.
Big little. Okay.
My mother, she's upset with me.
Mm-hmm. And I can hear that in your voice already. Is that really in your voice already?
What?
You're feeling a lot of this, aren't you?
I'm really upset about the whole thing.
Tell me, first of all, before you tell me what you're upset about, tell me why you're upset.
I'm upset because she's lying, and we both know she's lying. But
okay, but it's not her lying that upsets you, because that's her problem, right? How does her problem become your problem?
I'm upset because now we don't have a relationship anymore.
Okay.
And
because if she's going to lie and misrepresent what's happening, you can't trust her.
Well, I never. Right.
And if you can't trust her, no matter how long this has been, this trust issue, if you can't trust her, you can't have a relationship with somebody you don't trust.
Right.
Isn't that right?
That's right.
And that's part of the sadness that I hear already in your voice. And we don't even know what it is we're talking about yet, but we understand the dynamics, don't we?
Yeah.
You know? It could be anything, any subject. But if you feel you're being misrepresented and you don't trust them to be honest with you, then that's where the sadness comes. True?
True.
Okay, let's talk about your particular situation.
Okay. She's upset with me. Okay, I've been doing drugs for a long time. I know that's not right and everything, but she's wanted me to get off it for a while. Well, everybody has. But I know that it's something that I need to do myself.
Mm-hmm.
And she...
Should I not ask why you haven't yet?
I don't know why I haven't. I just... It's safe for me, you know. Drugs is like my friend.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's there when I need it. It makes me feel better. It's something that I got caught up into, and I just haven't been able to pull myself out yet.
Okay.
And
you were talking about your mother not being honest.
Right. So she offered to help me, and there was my...
Wait a minute. Wait, hold on. You were talking about your mother not being honest?
Right.
About lying to you?
Right.
Okay. And not being able to trust what she says?
Right.
Do you think that you might have a little problem with that?
Yeah, I know. I have a big problem with that.
As it relates to drugs?
Yes, and I've hurt them a lot, and I've burned them.
No, I'm not talking about the pain that you've caused anybody but yourself.
I know. I have caused myself. I've paid dearly, believe me, for what I've done.
Okay, so all right.
Okay, and they offered to help me, and I said yes, and then I backed out, okay? And she got upset with me because I did that, because I decided not to...
accept their help.
Right.
Okay. What kind of help was this?
Well, they were going to help me get off drugs. They wanted me, you know, to kick and... get me in church and go live with them and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I decided not to do that, and I left.
Okay.
So she got upset, and my other sister had taken some credit cards from her, and she and I both, everybody knows that somebody else, the other person took them.
But everybody knows that somebody else took them?
Well, my other sister took them.
Everybody knows that?
Yeah, everybody knows that I'm not the one that did it.
Okay. Does your mother know that?
Yeah, she knows that. We've talked about it.
Okay.
And yet she went and she filed charges against me and gave them my name because she said that the only way I'm going to get off drugs is by going to jail. And I'm just really upset because she's never done that to me. You know, she's never lied about something like that. And even though I've been on drugs, me and my mom has always had a relationship. I've always told her what's going on with me and where I'm at and everything like that. And now that she's done this, I just can't, it's blowing me away. It really has because I just don't understand how she could go and actually lie and say that it was me. You know what I mean?
Well, is her lie any different than your lie?
Well, okay, wait a minute. I know I've done a lot of lying to them, but
I haven't done nothing to them in
a long time.
Okay, hold on. Make sure we're tracking here. I'm not talking about your lying to them. I'm talking about your lying to yourself. Whether you lie to yourself or whether your mother lies to you, is there a difference? You weren't aware that you were lying to yourself?
What am I lying to myself about?
Now, you tell me. When it comes to drugs...
Okay. When it comes to drugs...
Tell me what you lie about. When it comes to drugs, what you lie to yourself about. Not to what you lie to everybody else about, but what do you lie to yourself about? Tell me.
About drugs?
Yeah, tell me.
Well, I know it's the whole drug thing is a big lie. You know, it's just
tell me what the lie. Tell me what the lie is. No. Tell me what the lie is, because that's not the lie. It does gratify.
Comfort me, and that it's going to make things better.
Okay, that's the lie, because it is instant gratification. That's not the lie. The lie is that it's going to make you better. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. What is there another lie?
Well, no. That's my main thing.
That's the major lie you tell yourself?
Yeah, that everything's going to be okay and, you know, I can handle this.
Okay, so everything's going to be okay, it's going to get better, and that you can handle it. Those are the three lies that you keep telling yourself, right?
Right.
Okay. And then the lie that your mother told was that you were responsible for taking the credit cards.
Right.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you more about this lying on the other side of the commercial. Will you stay with me? Will you stay?
Yeah.
Thanks. Who you are is partly the result of who you were. Our childhood and adolescent experiences can leave unmistakable marks on our personalities that last well into our adult lives. Whether those influences become an asset or a liability is up to us. In the 2-CD package, The Power of the Family of Origin, John Jolliffe helps you understand your personal history, gain a fresh perspective on your past, and chart a course to a more fulfilling future.
If you have been a victim in an earlier period in your life, you will hold on to the memories of your past and resent them, and the real problem is that you're still a victim today. So why don't you just change?
I just feel like I'll disappoint people. I'll hurt her.
Uh-huh.
She's had a lot of hurt.
But isn't it time for your mother to grow up?
Yeah.
The Power of the Family of Origin, available at issuesoflife.info for just $15.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info and get your copy of The Power of the Family of Origin. This is John Jolliffe, and I'm speaking to Rachel. Rachel's 24 years old, and Rachel, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, good. Yeah, don't hang up on me. And Rachel's 24, and she's been using heroin since she was 18 years old, heavily. Isn't that right?
Right.
And you said that you didn't know what the truth was. And you were talking early on, you called me about the lies that your mother told you, or the lies that she's spreading around about you taking credit cards or her credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you're incensed. You don't feel like you can trust her, and you don't have faith in her. And you don't feel that she's respected you. And she's spreading these lies around when the family knows you didn't take the credit cards. And that's why you called. And then I decided to get below that story to find the storyteller, which is Rachel. And I want to find out more about Rachel. I want to find out why she's doing drugs, or one of the reasons. I know that people do drugs because it helps eliminate pain. It defers it because it's always there waiting very patiently, doesn't it? And I said, you know, Rachel, you've told yourself a lot of lies just as much as your mother's lied to you. And I said, what are the lies that you've told yourself? And you said, well, that using heroin is okay. Or I'm getting better. It makes me feel better. Or I can handle it myself. Those are the lies. And you said, I said, why do you tell yourself these lies? You said, I don't know, because I don't know what the truth is. I've lied to myself so long, I don't even know what the truth is. And I said, oh, I'm not so sure about that. Remember?
Yeah.
And I said, tell me what the truth is. Is it okay? And you told me, remember what you told me?
Yeah, I said, no, it wasn't okay.
It's not okay, because I keep on running. You said, I know I have potential, but I just never seem to reach that potential. I know I'm a good kid, but I'm not getting on with my life. And you said, the lie is I'm getting better. It makes me better. And I said, what's the truth? And you said, what'd you say? Does it make you better?
No.
What's it make you?
It makes me worse.
It makes you worse. Farther behind. And the third lie you tell yourself is, I can handle it myself, and you told me the truth was what?
I can't handle it.
Because?
Because it's too big.
And the evidence that you can't handle it is?
My life.
You keep breaking down. You keep going back. The longest you've been sober is 4 months. Since you were 18 years old, you're 24 now, you've been on heroin strong 6 years.
Mm-hmm. God, that's a long time.
Yeah. And then we'd start talking. But where's the pain coming from? Why would you start using drugs to begin with?
Okay, but I forgot to tell you, I'm 2 weeks clean. No, I'm a week and four days clean. I know that's not a lot, but that's a start for me.
I celebrate that for you. My only concern is that we've got to deal with the issue that caused the addiction to drugs.
I know.
We've got to deal with the problem. And I said, why did you start heroin at 18? Why not 16, or 15, 10, or something else? And you told me about something that I think is right to the core of the issue. Do you remember what you told me?
Mm-hmm.
What did you tell me?
That my mother had told me and my father that that I wasn't his real daughter. And
and remember you told me how close you were to your father?
Right.
And when your mother announced that he was not your father, it ruined the relationship. Mm-hmm. Not just the relationship with your father, who you thought was your father, but also the relationship with your mother. It was that she had been living a lie. You had been living a lie. And she hadn't been honest with you from the beginning. She hadn't told you who this man was. Isn't that the bigger lie than the lie about the credit cards?
Well, yeah.
And isn't that the one that caused your life to be in more turmoil than this thing about the credit cards just recently?
Well, yeah.
And you didn't go to heroin because of credit cards, the lie.
No.
You went to heroin because of the great pain of losing your father and your mother with that same announcement.
Mm-hmm.
What are you feeling?
Well, I feel like...
Don't go to your head. Go to your heart.
I just feel...
You lost your father.
I feel lost is what I feel. I feel... sad because everything got ruined, you know, and I don't know, I had so many things I wanted to do and I just couldn't seem to pick it up after that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, all that, it's been years, and I know I need to let it go. I'm sure they're probably saying, Rachel's like a broken record over and over saying this has what affected her, and that's why she's doing drugs, and I know that I need to get over it, but I just can't seem to do it.
And isn't that the bigger problem you have than the heroin? Isn't that the bigger thing to get over or get through or to work out or mourn than the heroin?
Mm-hmm.
And that if you don't get through that, you may just switch addictions. You may go from a heroin to coffee or to alcohol or to sex or to work or... religion or something else that you become addicted to. Do you see how those addictions sometimes move around on us until we deal with the underlying causes of the addiction?
Mm-hmm.
And in all the treatment or all the counseling or all the homes you've been in and all that stuff, did you ever deal with the losing of your mother and your father and the grand betrayal?
No, I never did.
Never did. Everybody wanted to talk about your addiction. Everybody wanted to talk about your drug use. Right?
Or I wasn't ready to talk and I just kind of played games, you know?
And you played games. Sure. You're being very honest with me. Do you realize that?
Well, you know what? I really want to change. I really, really do because I know that I have a lot in me. It's just that I don't know how to get there, you know, to the other side.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Do you think we're there? I mean, do you think we're hovering over the area that you need to work on?
Yeah, I know that that's... I know that's the problem.
That's the core. That's the core. Don't get lost in all of these struggles. Don't get lost in all of these other things that are going on around you. The boyfriend and why didn't he call you last night and your mother, why did she say that she knows it's not true? Listen, I could tell you why she may have lied. I can tell you how desperate she may be. I can tell you how guilty she may feel of even bringing up the subject that this man is not your father. She probably got some bad advice from somebody. She didn't know how to deal with it. I can tell you all the reasons of how she feels and why she does what she does, but you know what? It doesn't excuse and it doesn't wash away the fact that you lost your father, the man that was closest to you, you thought was your father. You lost that man in that one day. And you lost your mother because she wasn't honest with you beforehand.
That's true. I never really realized that I lost her, too. I just thought it was my dad, you know what I mean? Because me and my mom didn't get along then, so I didn't count it as a big loss.
Yeah.
But now I do, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. You need some counseling, you need to deal with that, and I think you might have your mother and father's support. And a man who raises you as his own is your father.
Oh, I know, and I love him dearly.
He may not be your biological father, but that matters less than the people who raise us. Rachel, I don't know where you live, but why don't we do this? Why don't you talk to Terry? The producer, and why don't you let him find you somebody in your area that can begin to start helping you with some of those issues that we've just identified today.
Okay.
You know, and tell your mother that you don't want to get into the credit card thing and all of that stuff, and you don't need to go to jail to start working on your issues. Okay?
Okay.
But that you want to start honestly working with the issues. And we'll also show you how you can get a copy of this tape.
Okay.
And you can play that for your mom and let her know how honest and forthright you've been. And let her support you in this. Okay?
All right.
You stay on the line, would you?
I will.
Did you notice how Rachel had a presenting problem that was very different from the real issues going on in her life? Oh, they were apart. She was concerned about her mother's lying. But do you see how the very big betrayal in her life and the lie that her mother basically told her and the lie that she's hoping her mother's telling her about her father, maybe this really is her father, maybe she, mom's lying again, you know, all that conflict she has? Well, many times the presenting problem is not the issue at hand, and yet we spend so much of our time in counseling and therapy and prayer and all this other stuff dealing with oftentimes merely the tip of the iceberg. Let's talk to Caroline. Caroline.
Yes, hi, John.
Welcome to The Issues.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, and I appreciate your show.
Thank you. How can I help you?
I have a couple of questions, or one question I have is I've noticed, even at my age, which is 41, that I've been running into situations where I've been getting depressed, and I feel as though I'm not able to kind of take care of myself when people are a little obnoxious or don't treat me well. And I've been finding this happening quite a bit. I'm divorced, and I find that being single, it's a little more difficult at times for a woman. It could be just my own inability to protect myself, but I feel like you kind of get taken advantage of a little bit more easily.
Did we talk about this before?
No.
Have we ever talked before?
No.
We never have?
No.
You've got someone wandering the earth with your voice.
No. No, I've never called before.
You didn't loan it to somebody, did you?
No.
Okay. No. They've got it. All right. So how do you set boundaries with people? Is that what the question is?
What do you do? Because I've had repeated situations of, I just moved and I have a new landlord, and he sort of was being very flirtatious, and after a while sort of backed off from it. I didn't really appreciate it, and he just doesn't talk to me anymore. He just ignores me when I walk past him, and
okay.
It gets me infuriated.
So are we talking about you don't feel safe with people?
Well, I don't feel as though it's as though I've just become very withdrawn. I cry a lot. I'm depressed a lot.
Okay, but you don't feel safe?
I don't feel safe. I've had this happen in many other situations where...
But not just flirtation?
No. I had it in a relationship where someone is not paying attention to what I'm asking for.
Okay.
And is constantly frustrating.
I would suggest that what you might look at, Caroline, or is it Caroline?
Caroline.
Caroline. What I might suggest that you look at is these experiences that you're having are in some way expressions of an unmet need. Your vulnerabilities, our vulnerabilities, these things we call triggers, buttons, are really our vulnerabilities. And these vulnerabilities are really unmet needs over extended periods of time. They make us absolutely very sensitive, very vulnerable, if you will. And so somebody comes on to you. They show you some kind of flirtatious attention. But these other people are people too. They've got needs. They're playing out some kind of drama in their life. And flirtation may be innocent, or it could be connected to some frustrated, dysfunctional need for sex or something that they really don't need. But in some way, our reactions and our response to them either causes them to withdraw and fold up their tent and go home, or our reactions encourage them further. But I'm suggesting that most people, when they interact, is coming from a basis of their fears or their desires. And that's why we react the way we do. I can only imagine how he may have interpreted your response to his flirtation. He may have been very hurt, not that you hurt him, not that you acted inappropriately, but that he may have been very hurt. He may have felt disrespected, rejected, all those things, and he needed all of that. Respect, you know, acceptance and all that. And you at the same time, what do you need? What's the unmet need, unfulfilled need going on in your life that makes you so sensitive to the interactions with other people? Mm. What is it? Do you have any idea?
No, I need to be respected. I don't like being treated like that. I mean, I didn't do anything, and I wasn't unfriendly. I didn't.
Remember, it's not just the most recent occurrence.
Right.
So when we talk about how he flirted with you and how he treated you, we're going to miss the point. The
right.
bigger point is that you need to be respected.
Right.
And is that an old need?
It probably is, but it's come into play more now that I'm alone.
Yes. And you probably have a lot of examples or stories to tell me where you weren't respected in a number of different ways.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh. And what is your basic belief about getting respect from people, maybe even particularly men? Is it possible?
Basic belief?
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean.
The attitude that you wander the earth with. What do you think about respect? Do you think it's likely? Do you think you're going to get it?
I would hope so.
Is it rare?
No, I don't think it's rare. I don't think it's rare at all.
Then you have a lot of respect? People respect you?
I do, from certain people, but I've been noticing I've been getting a lot of... I don't know. I just feel like I appear very vulnerable at times. And
yes.
I just wind up getting run over.
And when you need respect from so many people, mm-hmm. or from everyone, mm-hmm. does it feel that way? That you need respect from everyone?
I think sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And that makes us vulnerable, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
True, but how do you not be that way?
Well, you obviously were injured in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we need to connect up with the name of the person and the time in your life when that really injured you. Because unless we connect up with that, no amount of numbers of people respecting you will make up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the truest truth is, you really only needed that particular person at that particular time to stop doing or start doing what they were doing or not doing and respect you as a human being, as a girl, as a daughter, as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only person you really needed respect from. And not getting that, you're trying to get respect from everybody else all the time to make up for that. And that's why you're vulnerable, because you're never going to get it from everybody all the time, and you know that.
No, I understand that, but I don't understand why I don't stand up for myself. I don't appreciate some of the treatment I've gotten over the last year, and it's been very difficult.
You do appreciate, or you
I don't
haven't appreciated?
And I've had difficult.
You mean you
times.
Should have respected it? Or you should have enjoyed it, and you didn't?
No. I'm saying that I wanted to put up boundaries, and I wasn't able to, and it frightens me
mm-hmm.
that I'm not able to do that.
Who was that person who first didn't respect you? First name.
Recently, or you mean when I was a child?
The first one. Yeah, where this whole thing was born.
Well, I would say my mother.
Her first name?
Nina.
Nina.
Yeah.
Okay. It just makes it more real, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Nina. And how did she disrespect you? How was it so painful that may have set this whole course of this issue of seeing respect or so sensitive to disrespect?
Basically, I came from a very abusive home. My parents fought all the time, and everything was about her. It had nothing to do with my brother or myself or my other sister. It was all about her feelings and her problems, and we wound up just in the grist mill.
Okay, so you're very sensitive to being around anyone, employees, employers, girlfriends, boyfriends, children, anybody who doesn't give consideration to other people.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. But you see how it's getting played out in that way? Your sensitivity and vulnerability is caused because of the early years of experience in that case.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how much work you've done in terms of really identifying it and dealing with what was there and mourning whatever losses, the things that weren't going to be fulfilled, and then recognizing how it should have been, because you didn't need your mother's respect all the time. You didn't need your parents to never fight and argue or have conflict. It was the kind, it was the intensity, it was the amount. You see? And so you've gone from one extreme to the other. too much disrespect, and now you want too much respect. You want respect all the time from everybody, always.
Yeah.
If you're honest with yourself, that's what you're looking for. And the moment you don't get it, it triggers all this other stuff in the past that you have yet to heal and work through.
I see.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. I understand that. I just wondered what it was setting up. I've been very depressed in the last year, and I've just wondered what it was.
Well, just stay in the line. We'll give you some good referrals. You can get some of that work done. And when you get into those work, call me again.
Okay,
stay in the line.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Yep. Our vulnerabilities, my friends, that's where they come from. Those vulnerabilities come from that very place. Okay? All right. Let's talk to Sarah. Sarah, welcome to The Issues.
Hi.
How can I help you, Sarah?
The reason I'm calling is I've been away from my husband for 2 weeks now. Initially, the reason wasn't with intentions of separating. Because I've been able to remove myself, I've been thinking about a lot of things that are really wrong in this relationship. And one of the basic reasons I'm having a hard time going back is because my children, very recently, social services got involved with my children, and some allegations were made of abuse, and they were pointing the finger at my husband.
So you're separated. You're separated, and so your question to me is, should you go back or should you stay away? Stay with me. We'll talk about that on the next issue of Life.
When is it right to risk hurting a loved one in the pursuit of honesty? How can I say the things I've always felt about others but never had the courage to express out loud? What does it take to help another person understand exactly what I'm thinking and feeling? In this assortment of calls from the Issues of Life broadcast, John offers a practical approach to dealing with difficult or uncomfortable relationships.
You know, many people today fear communication. They fear the whole process of communication. But people who are afraid tend to do a couple of different things. Do you have a list of things that are intolerable to hear? I mean, too painful? Do you have too many buttons that are easy to push?
I have way too many.
Do they realize how difficult it is for you to get their acceptance?
Did
you
feel like directly. I told them.
Well, why not directly?
Communication Dynamics, available at issuesoflife.info for just $9.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info and get your copy of Communication Dynamics.
This is John Jolliffe, and we're talking to Sarah. Sarah's been married for 4 years, and she had one of those terrible moments when somebody knocked on her door, and from social services, that's the Child Abuse Reporting Agency, and somebody had made an anonymous child abuse report, and the subject or the individual was her husband. They have three children, a three-year-old, a one-year-old, and she's pregnant with 3 months. And your husband was the subject of an investigation of both physical and sexual abuse of your three-year-old daughter, wasn't it?
Right.
And you were telling me about some of the things that, the allegations that were made.
Mm-hmm.
And you were also telling me that I guess your three-year-old daughter had reported to someone. You still don't know who that anonymous reporter was.
No.
And that three-year-old daughter had told that someone about four things that had happened. One was something about what she found in her pants and her underwear, and the other thing had to do with a bad man.
Yeah, the person happened to have seen that in her clothing, but the actual thing that came out of my daughter was the bad man. That was the only thing she had said.
She had reported that to you before.
And she had talked to me. My daughter had talked to me about that, and I always left it open of, honey, you know, who's the bad man, so that Mommy can do something.
And did she describe the bad man?
She just would go off into gibberish, and it was like, you know, it was just, she has a very vivid imagination.
And how long has she been talking about the bad man?
Not since last year. Last year it was like a period of talking about it, and then it was,
okay.
And then she stopped.
And then she said something else. She reported something else.
She asked this particular person to tickle her private area.
This particular person being?
Being whoever the person who called.
Oh, okay. The anonymous reporter.
The anonymous reporter claimed to have experienced that with my child.
The daughter had asked her to tickle her or touch her in her
private areas.
Okay.
And
And what was the fourth?
I'm trying to think here. And a bruise. Bruises in her private area, which I have never.
And the doctor evaluated her?
Yeah, we took her and.
And did he confirm the bruise?
No, the doctor confirmed that there's nothing. So they're not following through. They feel that there's nothing to substantiate.
And who reported the bruise?
The person that called, the anonymous caller.
Well, this anonymous caller is certainly familiar with your daughter.
Yeah, and that's what boggles my mind. I have wanted to know this, to know who this person is, not for any kind of retribution or.
But who would this person give this anonymous report? Did this person observe this bruise?
That's what.
Or did this person hear of this bruise?
They said they saw. They said they saw. Uh-huh. And see,
I'm
very protective with my children. There's a very select few people.
Who would ever see this bruised area?
Would ever. When my daughter needs to go to the restroom, I take her. Right, I don't let anybody take her.
Okay, so they did the investigation.
They did the investigation. The psychologist spoke to her. They physically examined both my children.
And spoke to your husband.
And spoke to him also, interviewed him.
And what was the finding?
And they found that they felt there was nothing. There was nothing there.
There was nothing
worth continuing investigating, that they felt that...
In terms of your husband.
In terms of my husband and in terms of my daughter, that they don't think she has been abused, that she showed no signs, that children sometimes will talk about...
I tell you what, I'm not ready to give her that clean bill of health yet.
Yeah, and I'm not either, see?
I think the thing I would do if that was my daughter... is I would engage her in what they call play therapy with a therapist who specializes in working with children, because play is children's work. And as they engage the little girl with dolls and other kinds of means,
right.
Sometimes art therapy, other kinds of therapy, as they engage her in that, they can make some diagnostic determinations when the daughter doesn't realize she's reporting by the play that she engages in.
See, when we took them, it was basically out of our hands at that point, and I wanted to know the truth.
I understand.
And I had confided in my husband, and I said, you know, this is really difficult for me to say, but because of past untruths in our marriage, I told him I can't really stand firmly and say I believe you 100%.
Okay.
That you would not touch the girl.
So you've got two problems, two challenges. You got the first challenge of what are you going to do about your daughter? And I think that she needs a little more therapy, or maybe some therapy, and that would be the play therapy that I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing you have is the bigger issue, and that is there may not be enough evidence to convict him, but that doesn't mean he's innocent. And there may be some things that go back that you have yet to tell us that we don't need to know today that caused him to be suspicious and that you can't really trust what he's saying.
Yeah.
There's not enough evidence, and maybe that's a good thing, because maybe it hasn't gone on too long or too involved or not at all.
Well, I'm with them.
But
24 hours a day.
Okay.
You know,
but you got to be careful too, that you don't just give everything and everybody a bill of good health. You know, you have to be careful of it couldn't have happened on my shift.
Oh, no.
Okay?
No, and I'm not
I think that maybe another thing you might want to do is, as you find a good therapist for your daughter, there might be someone else who might be a good therapist for you and your husband.
Well, this is the issue I'm dealing with at this point. He seems to have gotten past the defensiveness and just the shock, I guess, of telling him that I don't totally feel safe going back home.
Okay.
Because I feel like I'm basically...
And so where are you now?
Pretending. I'm at my sister's.
No, no,
my
no.
Family.
I mean, no, no, no. Where are you in terms of you and your husband?
Oh, okay. Well, just speaking today, he's open. He said, I'll do whatever it takes to make this work.
Okay.
I'll go to counseling.
Then I would suggest you do just that. Give her some help and get your husband and you some help.
But what I'm questioning is, should I be at home doing this? See, this is where I have no peace, is that I don't want to take my daughters back home and allow that possibly something might happen again. Or, because his reasoning now is, he's telling me, you know, I want to work on this, but I want to do it as a family. I want to do it together. I don't want to be apart.
Yes. And I can understand that. The question I would ask you is, the wound, the distrust that you have with him, is it directly related to this suspicious child molestation? Or is it more related to other things that have not been discussed between the two of you? Other mistrusts, other betrayals.
Yeah, there's a history of untruth that have come out.
Okay.
And only by force, never by a willing heart.
Okay, then maybe this is the time where he's willing now to deal more honestly, because maybe he senses a strength in you in terms of willingness to separate if he's not going to deal truthfully. And so you've upped the ante now. In a sense, he's more willing to deal with whatever pain he has been denying rather than the pain that he's anticipating, and that is losing you and the family. I wouldn't use the family to punish him, but I certainly would hold my ground and make sure that he understands that if he doesn't deal honestly with you at this time, then you are going to do something this time. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and
I would get into therapy as quickly as you can this week. Don't delay. But I don't know that I would tell him he has to stay away until we get through some of the therapy.
No, I haven't forbid him from. He's come here.
Okay. Let me just give you a referral, and maybe that would help you. But that's the answer I would give you.
Have you ever felt like a matador out there in the ring, all alone with an angry bull ready to charge? Intimidating, isn't it? Well, it doesn't have to be. Get a copy of John Jolliffe's 2-CD seminar, How to Be an Emotional Matador. You'll learn how to cope with intimidation and face relationships with courage and compassion. Bullies you face at work, at school, or at home with the children or neighbors won't seem as strong or as dangerous.
Remember, people are literally giving themselves away. They're telling you how to have a relationship with them. You have troubles with men even now? Speaking up and talking about your feelings and thoughts?
Yeah.
So we're looking for somebody, someone. There must be someone out there that has my best interest in mind.
How to Be an Emotional Matador, available at issuesoflife.info for just $15.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info to get your copy of How to Be an Emotional Matador.
Okay, let's get on with Vicki here. Vicki, welcome to The Issues.
Hi, John.
Nice to talk with you.
You too.
Mm-hmm.
Finding I get bored with things easily.
You get bored with things?
Yes.
Do you get bored with people as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And you don't know why?
I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a lack of a challenge or I don't know what it is.
Okay. Now, when you say bored, what do you mean by bored? What feelings would you associate with this?
Tired.
Okay.
Just sort of, I guess I'm so afraid of being content with things that I don't like that feeling of contentment.
You're afraid of being content?
Yes.
Isn't that an interesting expression?
I guess because I feel that I'm not at the point in my life where I want to be content as far as finishing school and having the job that I would
okay.
get in my career.
It's much like the person who said that they were afraid of flying or afraid of dying. You see, people who feel as though they haven't reached their potential, they haven't accomplished, they haven't made a mark, they haven't made their contribution,
right.
They haven't found themselves, are afraid of dying.
Hmm.
They're afraid of being bored. They're afraid of getting stuck.
Yes.
You see, I just wasn't sure. When you say that you were bored with things and people, three things came to my mind immediately.
Okay.
It could have taken us in any number of directions. Let me tell you the directions I was going to go with you. And not that necessarily any one of these are appropriate, but
right.
Here's the three things that came to my mind. You're a person who needs a lot of stimulation because in some way you are detached from yourself. You're not feeling your life. You're not processing your life as you're living it. So you're out of touch, and therefore you need a lot of stimulation. And so you get bored because you don't get enough stimulation. That was one direction. Right. So I would have taken the you're out of touch direction. The other one was you need so much affirmation, confirmation that you're special, that you're loved, that you're respected, that in a relationship, you know, once you have become accustomed to each other or familiar with each other, you feel like you're taken for granted. There's not that honeymoon phase. And when you learn your job, you don't feel like you're being challenged enough. You're doing it, so you're not going to get a lot of affirmation for learning new things. And so there was that direction I was going to take about you just need so much validation that boredom frightens you. And then the third direction was the direction that you've taken, is that you're bored because you're not really doing what you really want to be doing.
Right.
You know, you could enjoy it, what you're doing, if it weren't for the fear that you're going to get stuck doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And that you really want to accomplish more in your life than you're accomplishing.
Right.
Well, I guess it was the fourth. And the fourth one was you were bored, and I saw boredom as resistance. That you really were afraid to move on. I mean, you could do something else. I mean, the last job I had before I went into therapy and graduate school, I got fired from my job. It wasn't because I wasn't competent. It wasn't because I was stealing from the company. I just wasn't putting out the effort that they were paying me for. And the reason? My boss summed it up very well. You have far more talent and far more ability than you are applying yourself. You need to go do something else that challenges you because this job no longer challenges you, but you're too insecure to go do it.
That is I.
And so boredom is really the resistance to putting ourselves on the line. We're really afraid to go for it.
But how do I get over that?
Well, which one of these four or five directions?
Well, in actuality, all four.
I got all the problems. Intern's disease.
All four.
I got everything I'm studying.
They actually agree with me, however, it would be the aspect of afraid to move on.
Okay. Okay, the fear of moving on.
The fear of moving on.
And what is the fear about?
I really don't. I guess I haven't thought about it. I wouldn't say that I don't know because I do, but I guess I haven't thought about it long enough to really know the answer.
Okay, so you haven't moved on even in this question, to think about
right.
it, raising questions about it. Well, that's the work I think you need to do. Do some work on thinking about the fear of moving on. And the reason that you, and the fact that you fear moving on, you come in and you dig in and you're not going to cooperate with moving on because you have some doubt, some fear, some insecurity. And so since you don't move on, you find your life boring. It's too familiar. It's too much routine. It's not enough challenge. It's not of stimulation for you. Okay, you're capable of more, but you're not doing more, and I need to know why. And you need to be thinking about that.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Why aren't you moving on? I know what you're afraid, but what are you afraid of?
Will do.
Okay, Biggie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Maybe we all got a little out of that one, huh? Who hasn't been where Vicky is? Okay, let's talk to Don. Hey, Don.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi, hi.
Okay, Don, what's going on?
Well, I've just been changed one job because I was getting stuck in it. And so I left it to go to another job, and I started on that. And then within 2 weeks, I got fired, so now here I am, stuck again.
And why did you get fired?
It was real strange. It was. They said it was incomplete probation, so I didn't. I wasn't.
So you were hired, and they were watching and observing you to see if you worked out.
Right.
And you didn't work out to their satisfaction.
Right.
Now, what was the reason given for your termination? How did they explain not to their satisfaction?
Well, you know, the first 2 weeks I had a review. And they told me I was doing fine, I just wasn't going fast enough.
Okay.
As long as I didn't mispick an item, I was working in a warehouse.
Okay.
And so they do everything off of time. So the third week, they told me, oh, now we got a problem. Now you mispick something, and your time still isn't any good. We don't know what we're going to do with you. Okay. So when I came to pick up my check, they didn't even give me a warning about it. They just said, sorry, that's it.
Yeah, okay. So knowing yourself as you do,
right,
whatever the problems are or have been that you've known about showed up again, didn't they? I mean, you can argue that you're victimized, that they didn't give you notice, that they were cruel, unfair, they should have given you another chance. But you know and I know, well, you know better than I, what they may have terminated you for. It's a problem, it's an issue with you that you've had before, isn't it?
I wasn't going fast enough.
Yes, but isn't that, whatever that means, you know, whatever that means...
Right.
You've known that to be a problem.
Right, in a way, yes.
Okay, tell me what you know about that.
Well, you know, probably because the direction I was going in, it really wasn't what I wanted to do.
The job you had?
Both of those.
Both those jobs were not jobs that you really had an interest in.
Right.
So why did you take the jobs?
Well, the first one was, I had got along with that one, okay.
You could get along okay with it.
Right.
But why did you take it?
Well, I actually liked the first job. I was driving.
What
I was doing
it?
Fine at it.
Was it the direction you wanted?
Not really.
Okay, why
not
did you?
Not in the end.
Why did you take it?
Why did I stay?
Yeah.
For monetary reasons.
Yeah, but what you want to do, the real direction that you wanted to be on, not
right,
the one you settled for, but the one you wanted to be on, didn't it pay money?
The one that I wanted to settle on?
Yeah, the one you really wanted to be doing.
Yeah, but I always get a bad rapport from that when I tell them what I really want to do.
When you tell people what you really want to do, and is this employers?
Right.
Okay, when you tell employers, you're hired for one thing, and when you tell them what you'd really like to do, they don't share your enthusiasm? They don't think that you can do that?
Not so much, because it's music.
What is it you want to do?
Well, I wanted to do writing with music, you know, singing. I'm a singer-songwriter.
Well, yeah. Well, why don't you go for that? I mean, when you're doing a driving thing, you're driving for a company, and you tell your employer you want to go write music, they're not going to pay you to write music. And
right,
they may kind of poo-poo that thing, too, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But why don't you go ahead and do your music? Don't go and get employed, or go get employed and work part-time, and the other part-time do your music and your writing. Why don't you do that?
You know, that's a it's a good question, because, you know, it's something I had a problem with. I guess you're catching on to it, and it's the procrastination.
Yeah, but procrastination is resistance.
Right.
I think you're really afraid to put yourself on the line, and you may be even doubting yourself. More than other people doubt you, you may doubt yourself.
Healthy relationships don't just happen. They're a result of consistent care, creativity, and sometimes careful planning. In a collection of conversations with listeners entitled Relationship Strategies, John examines the reasons why understanding and getting along with others takes more than just chemistry and coincidence.
Withholding, blame, all of these things secure particular gains and entail particular losses for the person who adopts them. What was the pain that began this behavior, this strategy, if you will?
I was married to a man who was abusive to me. We got married because I was pregnant.
You knew your loneliness.
Yes, I did that.
You knew a lot about you in terms of wanting to be attached or involved with someone.
Yes.
You believe it's doing something for you, and you also believe that this is the only possible thing that you could do.
Relationship Strategies, available at issuesoflife.info for just $9.99 plus shipping. Log on today to issuesoflife.info to get your copy of Relationship Strategies.
Don, my man Don, he has a dream, and I love Don. I love Don. I love all the Dons that have dreams. Don't let the naysayers, the stinking thinkers, and the you can'ts, and who are you to do that? Don't let them get in the way. Don't let them blow out your candle. You know, as Don says, I let people make up my mind for me. He lets other people make up his own mind. Listen, the naysayers will always be out there. That you can't do it, and you're too old, and you know it. You don't have what it takes. They're going to be out there. And those people, they just tell you a lot about themselves, don't they? They probably never had a dream. They never have something they wanted to pursue. Listen, you've got to pursue that. If you have a passion for something, you have to pursue that. You have to pursue it. And the fact that Don found he ran into procrastination, well, before he ran into procrastination, he ran into fear. He ran into this false belief or this small opinion of himself and his potential. Listen, the successful people of the world, however you define success, the successful people that you would identify as being successful in life, you don't think they ran up against procrastination? You don't think they had to overcome that? You don't think that they didn't run into fear and self-doubt? You don't think that they ran into the naysayers, some of the same ones that we may even see? The stinking thinkers? Listen, they did. And what they did, that many of us don't do, is they believed in their passion. They believed in their dream, and they persevered. They pushed through the envelope. Listen, there's an invisible membrane out there, my friends. You're going to walk out through it today. Somebody's going to bump into it, and you're going to back away from it. It's an invisible membrane out there that says, who do you think you are? Okay? Believe it. You heard it here first. You know, some time ago, the Issues of Life declared war on ignorance. Maybe we need to declare war on superficiality, because that's oftentimes what a myth is. A myth is a rather superficial understanding of more complex truths. For instance, it would be simple if we just, to be more compatible, we just spent more time together. It would be a simple thing, wouldn't it? Just recommend more time. It's not that simple. You know that. It's how you spend your time and how ready you are, how prepared you are to be with another person. That's why I said, you know, bungee jumping and skydiving are really rehearsals for the big risks, because the big risks are always interpersonal. Another myth, a sure indication of a partner's love is that they will make you happy. Another myth. It's not somebody else's job to make you feel happy. Another myth, if you have a good sexual relationship, you're sure to be compatible. That's the basis behind so much promiscuity. If we're compatible, we got to try on the relationship sexually to find out if we can really live together. It's a myth. How about healthy relationships are discernible by the absence of conflict? Come on, my friends. Opposing needs and drives and wishes create conflicts many times. It's a myth. And what about if only our responsibilities were fewer, we'd have more time for one another and we'd be happier? Myths, superficial understandings. Early in a relationship, people are prone to claim that opposites attract. That opposites attract. And as a relationship ages, that same couples begin citing differences as a major source of their problems. The fact is that most couples have differences. You know that. Difference in values, difference in interests, difference in recreational tastes, levels of sociability, certainly background, you know, what we need, what we want. How could two people raised by different families in maybe different parts of the country or even of the city. I mean, even three children don't have the same parents, even if they're raised by the same two people. So we come very differently prepared for one another. In a healthy relationship, there are three qualities that are present. One, differences are accepted and they're accommodated between partners. We make room and allowances for these things. There's no pressure to be a mirror image of the other person. When we became one, it didn't mean I became you. Differences are accepted. They're accommodated. Secondly, the strengths of one are seen as an opportunity to be tutored or taught by the other. I mean, if one person is good at handling finances, and let's say another person is good with household repairs, rather than retreating to our respective corners of competence, maybe what we ought to do is seek to have the other partner teach us what they know. And the third point in healthy relationships, the third point is you need to discover one activity that you regularly enjoy experiencing and doing together and make sure you do it. Do it together. Learn together. Grow together. Invest in your relationships, okay? Listen, the best investment advice you'll ever get from me is this. Invest in your own futures. Invest in your own lives. Invest in your own families. Don't invest in gas and oil and other kinds of things. Invest in your own careers. Invest in your own lives. It's the best investment. It's the only investment you can have control of.
You've been listening to the Issues of Life podcast with marriage family therapist John Jolliffe. John would like to hear from you. You can email him at writeme@johnjolliffe.com. Jolliffe is spelled J-O-L-L-I-F-F-E. If you'd like to know more about John or order any of the resources you've heard about today, log on to issuesoflife.info. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the next Issues of Life.